And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and today we're going to be talking to Larry Krotz, who's written a book, A Child's Country Christmas. And we're going to talk to him. Larry's going to read a chapter from the book. That'll be at about 5:30. And we are also featuring today, we're going to speak to David Jacobs, who's known by all, I'm going to call him a celebrated international lawyer. And he has responded to a question from a Canadian peace organization on the legality of Canada's present bombing exercise in Iraq and perhaps Syria. And that's what we're interested in. Suppose this moves to bombing Syria. So we're going to talk to David Jacobs about that. And following, we will talk about this huge anti-austerity demonstration that happened in Quebec City and Montreal. If you read Telesur, you'll know all about it. They featured it. If you read the Toronto Star, it'll be news to you. And if you read the Globe, it'll really be news. What? Huge demonstrations. Telesur puts the figure at 200,000 total, and that would be Quebec City and Montreal. And if you don't know, this is a lurking problem. I will give Chantal Hébert the credit. She pointed out that this could be a problem for Justin Trudeau, because the Premier of Quebec had promised that he was not going to increase the daycare fees. He thought, as a matter of fact, even a $2 increase from 5 to 7, he said, oh, no, that's very bad. We won't do such a thing when I'm elected. Well, he's elected, and it turns out that the increase is not a little one, it's a big one. And people with children are in the streets in Montreal and in Quebec City. A very underreported story. So we're going to talk to the publisher of Baraka Books, Robin Philpott, about that. And also I want to make sure I mention there is a book sale going on Danforth. And it is a 290 Danforth on Saturday, December the 6th from 11 to 5. And it's put on by the Friends of the Cuba Five. The Cuban Five, you might remember, we spoke to a couple of authors, Mr. Keith Bolander and Stephen Kimber, on this issue. That's going to be Saturday, December the 6th, 11 to 5, Cuban books, and they will also have Cuban music, CVs and DVDs, and we hope that everybody will attend. That's Saturday. And we now are joined by David Jacobs,
hello.
Toronto lawyer. How are you, David?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. And you have written a really important declaration. I noticed, by the way, it's being picked up in a lot of places. As a matter of fact, I had not realized there's an organization, Lawyers Against War, called LAW. And they had issued statements themselves over the years. We haven't heard much from them. But at the moment, we have a rather burning issue. The Canadian government has said that and is giving more and more publicity to its bombing missions in Iraq. And as they do so, they have also introduced the possibility, they say they're looking at legal hurdles that might cause a problem if Canada were to carry their missions into Syria. The United States government, of course, is already doing it. It's not clear what other states are doing it, but there's a kind of presumption in Canada that, well, this is something, as they used to say, willy-nilly, we can just do. We start one place, and then we go into one country, Iraq, then we go to Syria. Your statement on this subject makes it clear that you don't think it would be proper or illegal. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I started off by thinking about it because Stephen Harper said he was looking for a legal opinion as to the justification to bomb Syria. And my point is that we doesn't need to bother to look, because the law on this is cut and dried in a way that very little law is actually cut and dried. Not only can Canada not bomb Syria as a matter of international law, but if Canada were to bomb Syria, it would be an act of aggression against Syria, in itself a war crime, and not just any old war crime, the most serious kind of war crime, a crime against the peace, which the Nuremberg Tribunal declared to be the most serious war crime, which contains within it the accumulated evil of the whole. I'm not quoting exactly, but that's the sense of it, which means that crimes against humanity and war crimes, and we're complaining that that ISIS is guilty of crimes against humanity, which it no doubt definitely is, but that those crimes are subsumed within the overall umbrella of crimes against the peace. You can't just go to war anymore. It's not the law. And that's unfortunately something people, particularly the Tory government and frankly the opposition as well, kind of miss the plot here. The real story is war is illegal, period, except under very narrowly defined circumstances. So in the piece I wrote, I quoted Antonio Cassisi, who was the first president, by the way, of the United Nations International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, and he wrote that you could only go to war under the Charter of the United Nations only were authorized by the United Nations Security Council or in self-defense. And those things just simply don't apply here. We don't have a Security Council resolution allowing us to go to war against Syria. And certainly bombing Syria is going to war against Syria. I mean, no one would seriously argue that if a foreign country was upset about a violent terrorist group in, you name your province in Canada, wherever, Manitoba, that it wouldn't be an act of war against Canada for that foreign country to start bombing up Winnipeg or or Saskatchewan or something like that. It's a ludicrous kind of idea. So we think we can just go in and bomb a sovereign country because we don't like ISIS. That's not a sufficient cause to go to war. So the UN Security Council hasn't said that we can go to war on that basis. But what about the other a legitimate cause to go to war, which is self-defense? Well, self-defense, again, is something very, very narrow under the United Nations Charter. Section 51 of the UN Charter talks about self-defense if an armed attack occurs. And then you can only defend yourself until the Security Council has taken measures necessary to maintain international peace and security. So you can't just exercise the right of self-defense willy-nilly. There has to be an armed attack. The self-defense has to be necessary to defend the against the attack. You've got to be able to be subject the claim that there's an armed attack to proof and no fabrication, that you don't have any other means of self-defense, and it's proportional to and demonstrable necessity, and it's only temporary. Well, none of this applies. None of this applies at all. And in order to exercise self-defense, even the right of collective self-defense, which still exists, but you can't exercise collective self-defense on the basis of your own assessment of the situation. It has to be on the basis that the state which has been the subject of an armed attack has to form and declare the view that it has been attacked and then request the assistance. Well, that hasn't happened with Syria. And Syria, frankly, could get on and fight on its own if its sovereignty were recognized. And let me just go back to another point, if you don't mind. I mean, just go back to the United Nations Charter, and the importance of the United Nations Charter can't be overstressed here. The United Nations Charter was put together at the end of World War II to expressly to save succeeding generations from the scourge of war. I am reading from it there. And it also to reaffirm faith in equal rights of men and women and of nations, large and small. So it starts off with that proposition. And Article 2, Principle 1...
says sounds like somebody's attacking you.
That's right. Article 2, Principle 1 says that the organization, that is the United Nations, is based on the principle of the sovereign equality of all of its members. And it says also in Principle number 4, all members shall refrain in their international relations from the threat or use of force against the territorial integrity or political independence of any state or in any other manner inconsistent with the purposes of the UN. So if you roll the clock back, we in the West have been actually in violation of the political sovereignty of Syria for a long time by supporting and arming and financing terrorist groups in Syria, which go by a myriad of names, including ISIS, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, the Free Syrian Army, etc., etc., etc. And now we're saying we're going to continue to violate the sovereignty of the Syrian state by bombing Syria, because we now no longer like one of the Frankenstein monsters we've created, you know, which is...
Yes. Let me actually make that point that we first heard of this organization by... It's had several acronyms, but it's been one basically group of people here for 3 or 4 years, and they were beheading Syrians, destroying churches, murdering members of various religious groupings that they did not like, and the Syrian government has been fighting them. And now, in the name of fighting them, we are actually violating the space of a country that is. What do you make of that peculiar situation?
Well, okay, so in the first place, an attack against Syria without the approval of the Syrian government, without the request of the Syrian government for assistance, which, by the way, in and of itself isn't sufficient. The issue would have to go back to the Canadian Parliament, but let me put that to one side for a second.
The Parliament to one side, okay.
Put the Parliament to one side, yeah. The idea that we can bomb Syria for the activities of ISIS, which we've tolerated, not to mention probably encouraged in very many ways up until now. I mean, you just mentioned ISIS beheading Syrians, Christian missionaries and priests and so on. There's film of that on the internet. You can actually go and see the most horrific footage of ISIS encouraging, standing by and doing it while Syrian soldiers are being summarily beheaded in the streets. That didn't occasion a huge amount of fuss for our government. But just to bring the thing back to narrow legal terms, the Canadian government, in this sort of chimerical legal opinion that Stephen Harper is searching for, is stuck with a few things. One is the UN Charter. We are a signatory to the UN Charter, and we are bound by it. A war in breach of the UN Charter is a war crime, the crime against the peace. But not only that, we have something called the National Defense Act. There are a series of other statutes, by the way, which refer to our obligations under the Geneva Conventions and so on. But under the National Defense Act, the government can only put Canadian forces on active duty if there is an emergency for the defense of Canada. Well, that's not... No one can realistically say that ISIS is about to spill over the river and attack Rideau Hall in Ottawa. Secondly, action taken by Canada under the UN Charter, well, that doesn't exist, or action undertaken by Canada under the NATO Treaty or NORAD Treaty and so on. The problem of that is that the NATO Treaty, etc., or any other of these agreements, similar agreements, all subject, they're expressly subject to the UN Charter. So we come back in a circle. If it's not authorized by the UN Charter, we can't do it. If it's not authorized by the UN Security Council, we can't do it. If it's not strictly in self-defense, we can't do it. And even adding up all of that, they've got Harper would have to come back to Parliament, because that's what the National Defense Act says, and get approval. Yes. But again, have to show those conditions.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for all of that. And now, a last question. You must be disappointed that none of the opposition parties are raising your points.
No, there's
not a one.
Not at all. And the opposition to attacking Syria seems to be based on some rather peculiar ideas from both the Liberals and the NDP in opposition, unfortunately. One is, they both opposed the bombing Iraq, but more or less on the grounds that well, we don't know exactly what the parameters are and whether it'll work. And more peculiarly on the Syria one, I think it's been argued, I think by the NDP opposition in Parliament, that attacking ISIS in Syria will only help President Assad, and we don't want to do that.
Well, so they can behead in Syria, since it's for a good cause.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's a bizarre argument. It's sort of an inversion of reality. Obviously, President Assad, if he wants us to bomb ISIS, will ask us to do it, and he hasn't. So in the absence of him doing that, it's not helping him. At least he's not saying it's helping him. But the other part of the issue is that it leads to a peculiar, I think, circular, insular argument, which would say, okay, well then we should be supporting ISIS because they're attacking Assad.
Yes.
So it's not a principled argument. But people have to start looking at. We believe in the rule of law rather than the rule of men. So we should start looking at the law. And the law, as I said at the outset, on this issue, couldn't be clearer.
Very good. I fought the law, and the law won.
There you go.
David, thank you very, very much.
My pleasure.
David Jacobs. Thank you.